translation of the two energies manifest, spirit and dull matter, beings possessing living force, vegetables, grass, trees, and plants, are superior to dull matter, stone, earth, etc. Superior to non-moving plants and vegetables are worms and snakes, which can move. Superior to worms and snakes are animals which have developed intelligence. Superior to animals are human beings, and superior to human beings are ghosts, because they have no material body. Superior to ghosts are the Gandharvas, and superior to them are the Siddhas. Superior to the Siddhas are the Kinnaras, and superior to them are the Asuras. Superior to the Asuras are the demigods, and of the demigods, Indra, the king of heaven, is supreme. Superior to Indra are the direct sons of Lord Brahma, sons like King Daksha, and supreme among Brahma's sons is Lord Shiva. Since Lord Shiva is the son of Lord Brahma, Brahma is considered superior, but Brahma is also subordinate to me, the supreme personality of Godhead. Because I'm inclined to the Brahmanas are the best of all. Purport, in this verse, the Brahmanas are given a superior position to that of the Supreme Lord. The idea is that the government should be conducted under the guidance of the Brahmanas. Alluri Shahadev recommended his eldest son, Bharat, as the emperor of the earth. He still had to follow the instructions of the Brahmanas in order to govern the world perfectly. The Lord is worshipped as Brahmanya Deva. The Lord is very fond of the devotees or Brahmanas. This does not refer to so-called caste Brahmanas, but to qualified Brahmanas. A Brahmana should be qualified with the 8 qualities mentioned in text 24, such as Sama, Dhamma, Satya, and Tatiksha. 8 qualities. They are fixed in mind control, Sama, sense control, Dhamma, and truthfulness, Satya. They describe the Vedas in their original sense. And out of mercy, anugraha, they preach the purpose of the Vedas to all the conditioned souls. They practice penance, tapasya, and tolerance, tatiksha. And they realize the position of the living entity and the Supreme Lord, Anubhava. These are the 8 qualifications of the Brahmanas. Therefore, among all living entities, no one is superior to the Brahmanas. So the Brahmanas should always be worshipped, and under their guidance, the ruler should discharge his duty and rule the citizens. Unfortunately, in this age of Kali, the executive is not selected by very intelligent people, nor is he guided by qualified Brahmanas. Consequently, chaos results. The mass of people should be educated in Krishna consciousness, so that according to the democratic process, they can select a first-class devotee, like Bharat Maharaj, to head the government. If the head of the state is headed by qualified Brahmanas, everything is completely perfect. In this verse, the evolutionary process is indirectly mentioned. The modern theory that life evolves from matter is to some extent supported in this verse, because it is stated Bhuteshu Virudhya. Interesting statement. The modern theory that life evolves from matter is to some extent supported in this verse. That is, the living entities evolve from vegetables, grass, plants, and trees, which are superior to dull matter. In other words, matter also has the potency to manifest living entities in the form of vegetables. In this sense, life comes out of matter. But matter also comes out of life. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 10:8, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. There are two energies, material and spiritual, and both originally come from Krishna. Krishna is the supreme living being. Although it may be said that in the material world a living force is generated from matter, it must be admitted that originally matter is generated from the supreme living being. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam. The conclusion is that everything, both material and spiritual, is generated from the supreme being. From the evolutionary point of view, perfection is reached when the living entity attains the platform of a brahmana. A brahmana is a worshipper of the supreme Brahman, and the supreme Brahman worships the brahmana. In other words, the devotee subordinate to the Lord and the Lord is inclined to see to the satisfaction of his devotee. A Brahman is called Dvijadev, and the Lord is called Dvijadeva Deva. He is the Lord of the Brahmanas. The evolutionary process is also explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjalila, chapter 19, wherein it is said that there are two types of living entities, moving and non-moving. Among moving entities, there are birds, beasts, aquatics, human beings, and so on. Of these, the human beings are supposed to be the best, but they are few. Of these small numbers of human beings, there are many low-class human beings, like mlechas, pulindas, bodhas, and sabaras. The human being elevated enough to accept the Vedic principles is superior. Among those who accept the Vedic principles, generally known as Varnashrama, presently known as the Hindu system, few actually follow these principles. Of those who actually follow the Vedic principles, most perform fruitive activity or pious activity for elevation to a high position. Manushyanam sahasrishu kaschid yatati siddhaye. Out of many attached to fruitive activity, one may be a jnani, that is, one philosophically inclined and superior to the karmis. Yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam viti tatvataha. Out of many jnanis, one may be liberated from material bondage, and out of many millions of liberated jnanis, one may become a devotee of Krishna. Again, the translation. Of the two energies manifest, spirit and dull matter, beings possessing living force, vegetables, grass, trees, and plants, are superior to dull matter, stone, earth, etc., superior to non-moving plants and vegetables, are worms and snakes which can move. Superior to worms and snakes are animals that have developed intelligence. Superior to animals are human beings, and superior to human beings are ghosts, because they have no material bodies. Superior to ghosts are the Gandharvas, and superior to them are the Siddhas. Superior to the Siddhas are the Kinnaras, and superior to them are the Asuras. Superior to the Asuras are the demigods, and of the demigods, Indra, the King of Heaven, is supreme. Superior to Indra are the direct sons of Lord Brahma, sons like King Daksha, and supreme among Brahma's sons is Lord Shiva. Since Lord Shiva is the son of Lord Brahma, Brahma is considered superior, but Brahma is also subordinate to me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because I am inclined to the Brahmanas. The Brahmanas are the best of all. So there is some hierarchy then within the Lord's creation, within the material creation. And of course the material creation depends on the presence of the living entities. Aparayam itvas panyam prakritim vidhi me param jiva bhuta maha baho yayedam daryate jagat. There's another energy, Krishna said, that is apart from the material energy. There's another energy which is superior energy, which is composed of the living entities who are struggling with material nature, and they are sustaining the universe. So Prabhupada often explained that life comes from life, it doesn't come from matter. And matter is animated also by life, or by this, the presence of the souls, the spirit souls. And because the souls have a certain karma, they take birth in a particular position. Because they're full of energy, they cause that particular body to be active. So, in this way, matter is brought to life, you can say, by the existence of the soul. The Mahavishnu, he glances over the material energy, and by his glance he impregnates these spirit souls into the dull matter. In that way, everything is put into motion in the material creation. Otherwise, it would simply be what pradana. Pradana is just the sum total of material energy. But it becomes prakriti. It becomes into a manifested state due to this impregnation of the living entities by the Lord. And the living entities are always active. See, as soon as a living entity gets into a body, that body becomes active. It starts in a very seed-like form, but immediately there's action in that seed-like entity. His body develops, just like in a human being. The body develops within the womb. The child is born and his body develops more to a fully grown person. And then, of course, gradually dwindles away again. This is a symptom of material life, the presence of the soul in the material world, that there are six kinds of changes. There's a birth, growth, maintaining for some time, producing byproducts like children or like trees produce fruits. And even there are other kinds of byproduct, waste products like that. Different kinds of byproducts are produced by the living entity in the material body. And then there's dwindling, and then there's death. See, nobody can remain permanently in any one particular body. Even demigods who have very long lifespans, they also have to give up their bodies. Therefore, Lord Brahma himself, he could not give the benediction of immortality to Hiranyakashipu because he didn't possess it. But he gave him other kinds of benediction which somehow looked like immortality, and Hiranyakashipu thought that he was invincible. He hadn't reckoned on the superior potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, within this material creation, the living beings who are entangled in karma, they do move according to a certain system. Actually, the living being, when he falls from the spiritual sky, he takes the human-like form. That's said in fourth canto. Another place, Prabhupada said he gets the form of Lord Brahma. So, in any case, he gets some kind of superior form and he has the opportunity to again go back to the spiritual world. But if he doesn't take that opportunity, then if he doesn't listen to the instructions of the Lord, then he incurs karma. And if his karma is bad enough, then he has to go down into lower species of life. So once he gets down there, he's not held further responsible. See, suppose someone is given the body of a tree. Well, he's working off his karma, and the next life he'll come to a higher species. You see, otherwise, if he had to suffer karma for his activities, then he would go on staying in low species of life. Say a dog. A dog is performing, by our standard, he's performing sinful activities. He's eating meat. He's engaged in illicit sex life. Maybe gambling intoxication he doesn't do, but but some principle he's breaking, you see. So if he had to suffer karma, he couldn't come up. He's already suffering from his previous, when he was a human being, suffering. So, therefore, he's being gradually relieved. He's working it off, this karma. And so he's moving up through the species. So in that sense, there's some evolution. Prabhupada is, you know, speaking here in a way almost like he's, you know, giving some support to the material scientists. But he's agreeing with them, in one sense. Usually he's attacking them, but sometimes he agrees, you know, just to bring them to a slightly different point of view. Yes, you know, what you're saying is, you know, very interesting, it's very good, but actually the real thing is you're almost right, you know. You're very intelligent people and you almost guessed it right, you know, but just a little bit, you know, alter your understanding a little bit and then you'll have it right. You see? So like that he's saying, the living entities evolve from the vegetables and grass and plants. You see, matter has the potency to manifest living entities in the form of vegetables. So that's a very low birth. Someone goes down into vegetable. You see. Can you imagine it? Cauliflower. Some root vegetable, potato, you know, living under the earth, you know, so very, very damp, very, very dark, very dull consciousness. But you know, almost it's almost like, you know, potatoes, they almost look like stones, right? Under the earth. But you know, somehow or other, of course, potato is considered king of vegetable. Prabhupada said that, king of vegetable. You know, so the potato is you know, enjoying a very great prestige. So those vegetables, you know, after they work off that species of life, you see, then they can move up to something higher. Gradually, they can become a worm. So they can move then, and then they can come up higher, like that, insects, animals. And of course, among animals, certain animals are more elevated than others. Prabhupada, he said that from the cow, lion or monkey birth, the next birth will be human being. Cows are considered in mode of goodness, monkey in passion, lion in passion, and monkey in ignorance. So from those species one can come up to some corresponding human species like that. They sometimes say that cows are the future brahmanas. Cows are very pious animals. That's why one shouldn't kill especially cows for eating. There's a corresponding karma depending how developed the consciousness of the living entity you're killing is. See, when you eat a vegetable, you're killing that vegetable, isn't it? He's leaving his body so that you can eat. But his consciousness is more dull, so the karma is not as great as if you kill some kind of animal. But if you kill a cow, that's much worse than killing, say, a goat, because a goat is a lower goat or sheep. Or you find, say, like, you know, Thailand or somewhere, they'll kill things like, you know, rats and cockroaches and those kind of things. They'll eat. They'll eat those kind of things. So the karma is not as great as killing cow. And of course, killing human beings is worse karma. And because a human being is more developed, and killing a brahmana, this is the greatest sin. That's why we're singing every day in the Tulsi Puja, Yani Kani Chapapani, Brahma Hatya Dikani Cha, Tani Tani Panasin, Parikshina Pade Pade. By the circumambulation of Tulsi Devi, all sins that one may have committed are destroyed at every step. Even the sin of killing a Brahmin is considered the worst kind of sin. So then, that's why Prabhupada said even to be a vegetarian is not good enough, in the sense that it doesn't free you from karma. You still have to suffer karma for killing all those plants and vegetables. Of course, some sadhus, they would only eat fruits or berries or things, you know, they didn't kill the plant when they took them. Are they drinking milk because the cow is giving? So they're taking foodstuffs, and they're not, which doesn't knock anybody out of their body. See, so then that way they endeavor to avoid karma. But actually, just by breathing or by stepping on the ground, one is killing imperceptibly other living entities like germs and insects, very small insects. So actually, it's impossible to avoid some kind of killing. Jivo, jivasya, jivanam, it is stated, one living being is food for another. That is the way the material energy is set up. But if one offers all his activity to Krishna, and if one offers his food to Krishna, then Krishna, he is relieving one from the karma. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita, if one doesn't offer his food to the Lord, then a person is only eating sin. You know, no matter how, even he's just taking fruits, if he's taking for his own enjoyment, then he's implicated also. Because he's not acting for the service of the Lord. He's acting for his own interest. So we have to learn how to make our interest one with the interest of the Lord. How to use everything in Krishna's service, how to even cook for Krishna and eat for Krishna. You see, the devotee, when he's cooking, he's not thinking what will this taste like, but rather he's thinking this will be for Krishna's pleasure. And after it's offered, then a devotee, he's not just eating, but we say he's respecting prasad. He's honoring prasad because this is the mercy of Krishna. So like that, everything the devotee does is for Krishna. It is not for his own enjoyment or sense gratification. As soon as a person acts for his own sense gratification, then there is a question of karma. Then it becomes material. Prabhupada said that spiritual means everything you do it for Krishna. And material means there is forgetfulness of Krishna. So in this way, if one forgets Krishna, he becomes implicated in karma, and thus he becomes involved in this kind of gradual process of evolution, or else he becomes thrown down and he has to come up again gradually. In any case, he may be going up and down and up and down. He can go through so many species of life. Nityabada, he can be eternally conditioned. He can go on forever like that. So this position of transmigrating through the different species of life is a suffering condition, because it means repeated birth, death, old age and disease, again and again and again and again. Sometimes it's a long lifespan, and sometimes it's a very short lifespan. Just like there's Indra, just mentioned here, his lifespan is very long. There's Indra Gopa, he's some small germ, and his lifespan is the shortest of all. And you could see that, just like you could go into India in the rainy season. There are so many kinds of insects appear, and they'll appear for a few days, and then again they disappear. You know, so sometimes you'll see everything's covered in Maya, for everything will be covered in one particular kind of insect for a few days, and then gone. Then another insect, you've never seen it before. And again, like there are so many different types of species of life. So they're being constantly, the soul is pushed from one body to another body, to another body. And in this way, he's suffering this repeated birth, death, old age and disease. But because his consciousness is very dull, he can hardly understand what's going on. So, but in the human form of life, one has the opportunity to get a clear understanding. But unfortunately, most human beings, they're also not able to understand. They're also just bewildered. They're living in a phantasmagoria of material sense gratification. And they're just trying to dabble in different kinds of activities, thinking they'll get happiness by that activity. So actually, these kind of human beings, they're low-class human beings, the Prabhupada said. Low-class, mlechas, pulindas, bodhas, and shabaras. They're generally addicted to all kinds of sinful habits. And so in a sense, they're not really civilized human beings. Although we talk about civilization, just like we say, the Western civilization. Of course, there is culture, there is music, there is art. There is some kind of, you can say, civilization. But it is misdirected civilization, because it is not centered on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, previously, some hundreds of years ago, there was more God consciousness. Just like in Europe, you travel, Sakalasambhara, you're traveling in Europe. So you must have seen many churches, beautiful churches, old churches. Some of them must have taken even hundreds of years to build, some of those churches. Paris. You went to Paris? So you saw this Notre Dame, or Rome, what is it? Vatican, you saw. So there are so many paintings there by, who is it? Michelangelo. So they're all architecture and art devoted to the Lord, to God. And music also, this Bach, Handel, you know, these famous composers, some 300-400 years ago. Their works are all religious works, so they're much more refined than the music of today. And you can see the music of today is very gross. It's very loud, you know. The louder it can be, then I think the better it is. And all the lyrics of the music is all, you know, just very gross and generally just concerned with, you know, boy-girl relationship. Or else it's just some crazy lyrics that, you know, doesn't make any sense at all. Similarly, art, so-called modern art, you know, they're just sticking, you know, some cigarette packet on a onto a Coca-Cola tin or something, and then they say it's art. Okay. And the buildings also, isn't it? The building just, you know, concrete blocks they're putting together in Russia. All the buildings look the same, isn't it? Moscow, the whole city, just all apartment buildings practically. And they make the pieces in a factory, you see. They make like the walls, you know, big sections of wall in a factory. Everything is like mass produced and then they just bring it to the site and they just plaster it all together. So there's no kind of taste or aesthetics in it at all. In Romania, during the communist regime, Romania had many beautiful old, you know, towns and villages, and actually that area, especially, you can find southern Poland, southeastern Poland. Was that the city? Krakow. Did you go there? It's supposed to be very. I've not been there, but I heard very, very beautiful city. There's another city in Ukraine called Lvov. It's a very beautiful city, one of the most beautiful cities in the world, I think. So that also Romania was all part of the same country, I think, at one time. So that had many beautiful old places. But the government, you know, in the name of advancement, they knocked everything down and they built these agro-industrial complexes, they called them. You know, just apartment buildings. And you forced everyone to live in these little apartments and go and work in the factory. So this is real, you know, Kali Yuga, real Ugra Karma. Then, you know, just wipe out all the culture. Practically in Russia and those Soviet countries, all the culture just, you know, flattened. You know, the Muslim countries, you know, they had all their, also Muslim religion and practices and, you know, just flattened practically. Of course, that's good in a way for Krishna consciousness because the people are more, you know, receptive. Now they're taking to religion, but they don't know anything about their own religion, so they're willing to take up Krishna consciousness. That's one good, you can say, aspect. But factually, there's no feeling of God consciousness practically anymore. And in a country like this, New Zealand also, is a founded much later in a sense of developed by the Westerners much later. So there's not the same old religious tradition and culture in this country, isn't it? Although to some extent you'll find, but not nearly so much as you find in Europe. So we can see then within a few hundred years the human society has actually degraded so much. It's changed so much, and they've given up their God consciousness so much. And previously, people did follow some kind of moral codes, you know, no illicit sex life, no, at least not nearly to the extent that one finds today. There was respect for institution of marriage, but now it's all breaking down more and more and more. So this is a demoniac civilization. The prophet said, here it's stated in the next purport. He said, no one respects Brahminical culture. Demonic civilization is attached to Ugra Karma. Horrible activities and big industries are created to satisfy unfathomable lusty desires. Consequently, the people are greatly harassed by government taxation. The people are irreligious and do not perform the sacrifices recommended in the Bhagavad Gita. So, nobody is educating them what to do and what not to do. So because they have no information, they're just blindly following what the blind leaders are encouraging. So the blind leaders are out to exploit people and tax them as much as possible. So they only encourage them to engage in activities which will produce as much income for the government as possible. So therefore they're encouraging, you know, this drinking, smoking, illicit sex life, meat eating, they're encouraging. This country here is practically founded upon meat industry, isn't it? This is one of the biggest industries. Australia also. I saw an article that the devotees had pinned on the board at Unandagram that the number of cows, cattle, mainly cattle for slaughter, is much greater than human beings. You know, maybe 3-4 times the population. They're just breeding all these animals for slaughter. And it's also creating some environmental problems. So there are billions of animals being slaughtered all over the world. Actually billions when it's all counted up. So in this way, human beings are creating horrible karma for themselves. And Prabhupada said the result of this will be war in human society. This is a reaction you cannot just go on doing whatever you like and think you can get away with it and not have to suffer. You'll be forced to suffer by the laws of karma. So people need to be educated. What is karma? How does it work? How to become free from karma? So that's the science of Krishna consciousness. That information is here, you see, in this verse here, explaining how there's some hierarchy, some evolution through different species of life, how this karma is working. So if we become educated in this way, we can learn how to go back to the spiritual world, how to get free from all this bondage in material existence, how to realize our true identity and our eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's very nice here that the Lord, the incarnation as Rishabhdev, he's explaining the hierarchy and he's explaining how he's superior to practically everyone, but then he's saying that Brahmanas are superior to me. So Krishna is like he's like a devotee of his devotee. Krishna likes to see his devotees glorified, and he offers respects to his devotees, just like when Sudama came to Krishna's palace. Krishna bathed his feet, offered obeisances, offered worship to him, and sprinkled the water on the heads of his family members. So Krishna likes to see that. He likes to be called by names which refer to pastimes with his devotees. Parthasarathi or Yasodanandan. Nandanandana. This is very pleasing to Krishna because Krishna is always relishing different kinds of pastimes with his devotees. So in this way he likes to think of his devotees and he likes to give his devotees honor and superior position. Therefore, Krishna wanted that the Pandavas should be successful in the battle of Kurukshetra and that they should rule the kingdom. And they rule the kingdom according to the direction of the Brahmanas. So the Brahmana means one who's very conscientious, clean, studious, and eager to understand the Shastra, the science of Krishna, and teach that to others. So therefore, Brahmins are considered as head of the society, and if there's good head in society, then naturally everyone will become educated in the subject matter that they're supposed to be educated in. Now they have different kinds of, you know, skills, different qualifications, but they don't have a real education of what is the real goal and purpose of life. So if that is added, then the society can become properly orientated again. Everything will become more harmonious, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead will be pleased. So this kind of situation we have to create, even if we can't create it immediately in the society at large, we have to create a smaller society. That prophet has created ISKCON, so we have to go on developing ISKCON until it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger, and it spreads its influence among more and more people. So gradually, maybe not the whole society will become Krishna conscious. Prabhupada said that not everyone will become Krishna conscious because not everyone has sufficient brain substance. See, but still, if a small percentage become really Krishna conscious, then they can direct the others and help the others, somehow engage them in a way which will be purifying to them, just as Krishna has explained in the 12th chapter of the Gita. If you don't have a spontaneous attraction for me, follow the regular principles. If you can't do that for me, if you can't do that, give up the fruits of your activity. If you can't do that, you know, cultivate knowledge like that. He's given different guidelines depending on the level of advancement of a particular person. So even devotees become very prominent, powerful in society, doesn't necessarily mean that everyone will be able to come up to that same level. You see, but still, if they're guided by devotees, if the ruler is listening to the devotees, to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and he's ruling in a pious way, then others will gradually become purified. They can be engaged to assist the devotees, or some way or another, to become purified, even if they don't realize what's happening. You see. Still, if there's good guidance. Just like for example, India, in old times, in the Marwari families, and you can still see it today if you go to, you know, sort of remote regions where the old culture is still very much in place. Sometimes we go to Burma, and there are many Marwaris, a very traditional, old style. They have, you know, deity of the Radha Krishna in their home. Everything is very clean, usually all marble, and you know, they're pure vegetarian, never touched any meat or alcohol a whole life, and very pious. And usually they have some servants in their home. And some of these people are, you know, servants are very sudra-type persons, not very intelligent. But the masters, they're looking after them very nicely. And they're giving them protection. So although those persons don't, you know, they don't have much brain substance for understanding spiritual life, still because of being engaged in the service of persons who are much more pure and pious, then those persons are also benefited, you see. And the masters won't give them much money, hardly at all. They just give them food and shelter. And if they have family, they'll, you know, look after the family and educate the children and so forth. Because it is considered not good to give sudra a lot of money. What does he do with the money? Huh? You see these sudras working in factories. What do they do with the money? They go, they save a Friday night, then immediately they're going to the bar, isn't it? And they're, huh? Lotto, yeah. And they're getting drunk. They're either going to, you know, engage in intoxication, meeting illicit sex life, or gambling. Immediately, as soon as they get money, they're wasting it. You see, so therefore better not to give money. Just like in Australia, they're giving money to the Aboriginal persons, and they just spend it immediately, isn't it? The whole paycheck, they come into the town from the desert, they get a paycheck, and immediately they go into the bar. That's all. And they just stay inside the bar. And then, you know, if that bar closes, they just go out and lie down in the street. And then as soon as it opens again, they go back inside until the paycheck's gone, and then they go back into the desert again. So this is the foolishness to give money to such persons. That is a waste of money, and the persons are also harming themselves. Just like you don't give, you know, a bottle of whiskey to a child, do you? You know, they drink it, and then break the bottle and cut himself or whatever, because he doesn't know what to do and what not to do. So like that, there has to be some good guidance in society, so that persons who are not much better than children, they can be protected, and they can also, their energy can be used in a productive way in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if that spiritual leadership is not there, then it is practically hopeless, and everything just becomes more and more degraded, and then, you know, they're developing their so-called scientific technology, advanced technology, and building all kinds of weapons. They're very expert. They've manufactured so many amazing kinds of weapons. But what is the use? They're just going to blow everything up and damage everything and harm one another. So this is the... you know, they print all the color work on the pictures, and then they would print in the black and white on different languages, like Bengali, all these African languages, Vietnamese, all these different languages. They're printing so many languages of the world. And then they're shipping them out all over the place by millions and millions of copies. So like that in Bengal, they were distributing these, you know, and describing, you know, how wonderful the Soviet Union is, and all the progress that they've made in showing the, you know, pictures of the farm machinery and the pictures of the towns and cities and all the rest of it. So, you know, those simple people, they thought, oh, this is very wonderful. So they also became communist like that. So probably just like the communists have spread by the literature, so we can also spread by our literatures. So like that, if we distribute more and more, then people will be getting that information. And then they'll have questions, of course. Some of the persons will be attracted. And the devotees have to be able to answer the questions and show by example how to put this knowledge into practice. It's a fact that, you know, people out there, they're reading our books. When I was in Italy, I was invited to do a talk show on a radio, our radio, Radio Krishna. And it was very nice. It was about an hour, and people were ringing in asking questions. And all the questions were very intelligent questions. They were ringing in, I've got the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and in the, you know, Madhya Lila, Volume 4, text such and such, it says such and such. You know, please explain, you know. Like that, so many questions were like that. And people are listening to Bhagavatam class on the radio every day, going to work. So like that, there are so many people out there who actually attracted to Krishna. Maybe they're not at the stage of coming to live in the temple, but the more we distribute this knowledge, the more people will gradually become purified and able to take up Krishna consciousness. So this is a gradual process, but we should go on with determination so that the standard of spiritual life becomes more widely known and accepted in society. So then the whole society naturally becomes purified. And it's going on to some degree, isn't it? They are closing slaughterhouses, more people are becoming vegetarians, more people are becoming interested in reincarnation, in yoga, in meditation, in some, what we could say, sub-religious kind of principles. This is a byproduct from preaching Krishna consciousness. And those who are more intelligent, they actually grasp the philosophy and take it up and practice in their own lives. Mm. So then they can become Vaishnavas and Brahmanas, and they can become very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All right, any question or comment? Yeah.
Suffering the effects of bad karma by taking animal bodies or lower than human beings.
Mm-hmm.
What about all the living entities that are mentioned in the verse about human beings? Are they also from pure karma, or are they simply pure and not the karma they brought to human beings?
No, they would be incurring because they're generally more intelligent persons. Narad Muni was a Gandharva previously, and he was disrespectful to the Sankirtan party, and he was cursed to take birth as a son of a Sudrani, and for his activities there was some kind of reaction. Of course, that was also the blessing of the Vaishnavas in one sense, but anyone who is in a position where he knows, you know, what to do and what not to do, where there is some religious or spiritual knowledge in the society, then he's responsible for his activities.
You're thinking like of a ghost. They're saying the ghost is a higher birth than a human. Because that when the ghost is sort of living in the ghostly existence and appearing as a bad time as well.
That I can't comment on. It probably hasn't said anything here in the purport. Usually we understand a ghost is it's actually not a good birth. It's mentioned here as superior because they have no material bodies. But in other ways, they're definitely inferior. Just like the asuras are also, you know, they're mentioned as superior. Well, they're very powerful, big asuras. But in another sense, they're inferior because they're very demonic. And there may be different conditions, you know, for the different particular species. But so far I can understand, at least in demigod society, there is information. Obviously, there's information what to do and what not to do. And if one doesn't follow, then you would be subject to reaction. Hmm. Right. They should have known what, you know, they should have known not to behave like they did. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You spoke about Indra being able to be Krishna conscious. But then what we call intelligent people seem to be very anti. I mean, the skeptics of our thing in New Zealand seem to be followed professors and lectures at universities. So that's the difference of intelligence.
Yes. It's not considered real intelligence because they don't understand who they are. They don't understand who is God and what is their relationship with God. So it's not real intelligence. They have some skills, you know, that's all, some mundane skills. But of course, they're generally more intelligent than a common person, and therefore Prabhupada did encourage us to preach in the universities. And, you know, disseminate Krishna consciousness to these persons. And that's why he also established the Bhaktivedanta Institute, especially to preach to the scientists, because he knew that in the modern day and age, people, they follow the scientists. Scientists are like their gurus. So if we can make the scientists God-conscious, then, or the leaders God-conscious, then they'll automatically influence the other persons. But because they've got some mundane knowledge, they tend to be puffed up. So they don't like to, you know, they don't like to hear that, you know, that they don't have the best knowledge. They don't like to hear that. And they also think that by their own intelligence, they can ultimately understand everything by experimental knowledge. So that's an impediment. sometimes a more simple person can actually grasp or accept Krishna consciousness more easily because they're more humble.
In the example of the deities, like, for example, Bhumi, Mother Earth, Jamuna, how in the Krishna book and so forth, as a personified form that appears. In that sense, is the actual material nature is really, I'm trying to understand whether it's actually, Prabhupada talks about how there are certain stones in India, for example, in the nose, which is conscious and is growing in Andes, and so is the actual dull matter actually dull, is it? Or there certain parts of the material nature which are dull, parts which are a soul prison. I mean, Prabhupada talks about, and sometimes that stone in the soul, or how the soul affects a certain body.
That means the soul can be present in that situation. Generally, it's referred to as dull matter. And Krishna is making that distinction. There's an eightfold material energies, and then another energy which is superior, which is the living entities. But still, you know, Prabhupada has said that in certain circumstances, the soul may be present in a stone, a mountain.
So then, these deities, like actually Bhumi, is she conscious? Is her body the actual planet Earth?
She's conscious because Prabhupada said that she's disturbed by materialists taking oil out of the surface of the earth, or by the movements of impious kings on the surface of the earth. By King Vena, she was disturbed. She didn't want to produce sufficient, she stopped producing sufficient foodstuffs.
Can I just mention the aquatics that are lower than plants? So why do I argue that there's this power in eating a fish lower than a plant? So what's the understanding?
They're lower in the sense that they live in the ocean, and generally this is not very clean down there, and they eat all kinds of dirty things. So in that sense, they're lower. And if you eat them, then you're also eating, not clean things.
Is there less karma? Just like a vegetarian eats plants and vegetables and carrots and different things, and some people eat fish. Is it less karma?
Whether it's more or less exactly how much, there is karma. You see, there is karma.
That question before I had come to Srila Prabhupada, speaking to Lord Krishna Maharaj, he was saying that wherever there's a God, there's a living entity. So he's saying that God is present within the atom. And Prabhupada is saying, yes, then there is a living entity. And then he's inquiring, what about the condition of the living entity, what sort of consciousness they have. And Prabhupada said, you can see that.
Dormant condition.
What about, say, for instance, a whale? Modern science says that a whale has the same equivalent intelligence as man. Are they also, might they be the highest among the aquatic life forms, or what's essentially out of sense when it's shown they're very psychic receptive, like if one goes on to a beach, the others go to comfort, and they all kind of end up dying. They're very much compassionate and attached towards each other.
Obviously among the aquatics, some are superior to others. No doubt about that.
Maharaj, if you had an apple tree out in your backyard, could you off the whole tree and save the...
Anyway, the system is that you pick them and then you offer them. So somebody can chant his Gayatri and offer the whole world to Krishna. It's been done, hasn't it?
Could you explain to me just how these ghosts get delivered by Lord Shiva? Because, I mean, what happens to a ghost in the Western world if they have no appreciation of Lord Shiva? I mean, how does he actually deliver
them? Well, I mean, Lord Shiva's he's in charge of all the living entities who are, you know, in that condition. Obviously, he has his system. It's like Yamaraj has his system also. You know, whether you're in the east or the west, if you're sinful, you're going to be taken to Yamaraj. It's not dependent on whether the living entity knows about Shiva or Yamaraj or he doesn't know.
It's just that I read in one of the Purpose Prabhupada talks that the ghost has to wait in a certain form until Lord Shiva or someone. It didn't actually explain how the actual ghosts. You know, for example, when someone dies, you actually need to offer some hinder, some, you know, to go to buy or so forth, and obviously for Shai, right? But I was thinking for those just the actual process that was around the system.
Well, you know, Shiva, Yamaraj, they have the process. The person will remain in that body for a certain period of time, and then he will work off a certain amount of karma, or being in that subtle situation, and then, you know, he'll move on. That's all. Just like the people, you know, living entities are moving through all the other species of life.
Well, if I've mentioned, they say that the way he delivers them is that he places them into the wounds of women who engage in his descent. He delivers them from their ghostly body.
That's Prabhupada says that. Huh? Yes, because if someone is humble, he'd be more receptive and able to put into practice what he's heard. Whereas if someone is puffed up, then he'll always be challenging and then he won't be submissive enough to actually put it into practice. So, yes. And Lord Chaitanya says in chanting, humility is important, isn't it? Trinada Pisunacha. So it's also important in hearing. It's important in every aspect of devotional service.
Mm-hmm. I think what you mentioned before how good offering taking shanti for that, like shoot down the moon for respect. A lot of otherwise it could come and day. So also
Yeah, that's due to anartas, impurities within the heart. And there are different kinds of anartas. One kind is offenses. So there are different offenses like material attachment and you know, the 10 offenses to the holy name or the offenses to the deities. There are different kinds of offenses will definitely cause, you know, misunderstanding and cause one to develop a mundane attitude. Or another kind of anartha is just the desire for pious or impious material activities. And another kind is any residue from one's previous sinful activities. There may still be some residue there. I mean, even the body that one has is a product of his previous activities or the habits that he formed in his years before he came to Krishna consciousness, there's still certain attachments maybe there. The point is, a devotee has to change his consciousness in trying to understand Krishna, see Krishna in everything. So even if there's something which is produced by somehow by his past activities, a devotee should try to learn how to act properly. And if there is some other tendencies that he sometimes feels, he should see that's just a test. Let me take it as a test from Krishna and not give in, you know, to some mundane desires or non-Krishna conscious desires. So in that sense, you see it as Krishna's mercy, as a kind of test. But real Krishna's mercy is Krishna's instructions. And if you adhere to Krishna's instruction, then you'll overcome all the difficulties. Not that we, you know, have some mundane desire and we think, oh yes, Krishna's mercy, you know, let me pursue it.
Sometimes there's a route where devotees, they should also sleep together and expand in one particular camp. Shouldn't it be like a balance where, you know, like spread out and try to establish in different towns and spend time and energy, you know, different peoples and distribute as much books as possible? Seems to be like movement. Is it expanding one town?
Devotees are also traveling, preaching, distributing books. Padayatra, you know, there are different programs. We do programs in different times. Many times we've been, isn't it? To different times. Huh? Yeah.
It seems like this, like to establish some centers or something, you have to have times for people, you know, like this one or two person or favorable, so energy should be put into it.
Yes, so you visit them regularly?
A lot of energy is spent just in the
No, we also need to have our institution. Prabhupada said there has to be some institution. So both things have to be there. Do you want to join a traveling Sankirtan party?
Does the potency of prasadam, is that dependent on the consciousness of one who is honoring it or taking it?